Hello, everybody. You're about ready to listen to my interview with Daniele Servide from Sellix. And Sellix is an e-commerce platform that is designed specifically to help merchants sell digital products more so than physical products. I think you're going to enjoy this episode. Give it a listen. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the pod. I've got a really fun podcast episode in store for you today. I have Daniele Servide from Sellix on the pod today. Welcome, Daniele.
Hello there. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're talking off air. You're based in Italy, so obviously your name is Italian, and I was doing my very best not to butcher it, but I'm sure I did anyway.
You actually did it pretty good. Like, the Italian pronunciation is Daniele, so you hit it good there, so can't complain about that.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. Look, I'm practicing, obviously, my Spanish pronunciation of names, my Italian pronunciation of names, my French pronunciation of names. I'm moving to Mexico in February and going to be getting a lot of exposure to the Latin languages and Latin names. So it's definitely trying to practice my best.
Yeah. Because Italian is very similar to Spanish in some ways. And the names are as well. I know a few names that at least are very similar to what you would say in Italian or Spanish. Starting with mine, it's a great practice that you're doing. But yeah, it's still a bit difficult because even my surname isn't really popular in Italy. So it's only something that you can find mostly in the north. So yeah, you did a pretty good job anyway.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for your patience with my pronunciation. But it is great to have you on the podcast. In fact, I'm going to be flying through Barcelona on my way to Mexico City. We're going to be staying in Barcelona for a few days. And as I understand it, Europe is on fire from an e-commerce perspective. And you're living right at the apex. You're living right in the heart of the space. And you have developed your own e-commerce platform called Sellix, Sellix. And obviously you felt like there must have been a gap in the market that, you know, wasn't being filled. And this was something you felt like you were well positioned to be able to fix.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what the reason was. Because both me and my partner saw that there was an opening where basically there was no really good e-commerce website that was enabling people to sell digital products without having to rely on too many plugins. Let's say that you want to sell some licenses or some video courses or some activation keys for your program, software, memberships and subscriptions. You need to have like at least 3, 4, or 5 different plugins if you're on WooCommerce or if you're on Shopify, Magento, whatever your platform might be, you cannot do it natively. So we saw that opening, we saw that the digital e-commerce market was really on the rise. Every year, there's at least a 30% increase on new digital products being sold online rather than the classic t-shirt, shoes, and etc. And so we decided to actually build a great product that would basically replace the need for those other popular and big e-commerce brands. At the same time, we saw that also cryptocurrencies were, and we believe will be, the next great thing. And as of now, no e-commerce has them integrated natively too.
Yeah, look, I've been looking at your website and certainly the breadth of functionality that, you know, is quote unquote out of the box with your platform is pretty extensive. The ability to have digital downloads, the ability to have software downloads, serialized downloads, subscriptions, services, not just selling products, but also being able to sell services via your website, being able to have native out-of-the-box upsells and email marketing and being able to do affiliate marketing via the platform, being able to set up a multi-vendor marketplace via your platform, still have all of the analytics and the other things that you would expect, plus a full API for connectivity, being able to inject custom code and do embeds. But feels like you really have tried to make this an everything in the kitchen sink type of approach, all for still following that same very popular SaaS model that most platforms follow today. So people don't have to worry about infrastructure. They don't have to worry about servers. They don't have to worry about security. They don't have to worry about patching or upgrades. They just get it all with your platform. So it feels very much like you're following this well-trodden, very popular path of SaaS nowadays, but trying to include as much native platform functionality as possible so that merchants don't have to go out and necessarily spend a whole ton of money on customization or get nickel and dimed per month, nickel and dime to death per month with additions, enhancements, plugins, extensions.
Yeah, exactly. Because we are very proud of the like platform we've built, both in terms of our infrastructure, because as you've said, like the customer cannot spend and waste hours of his time or her time to like basically think about, okay, what service should I use? Should I go with Amazon Direct Web Services? Should I go with Google Cloud provider? Should I go with, I don't know, Azure with Microsoft or whatever? Their focus should only be on, okay, what great digital products can I sell and how can I do it in the fastest way possible? And the answer to that is basically it's us, it's Celnix. And at the same time, we saw that there were merchants that maybe wanted to stay with their current platform, which could have been WordPress or Magento, or they just wanted to sell servers and had through, for example, WHMCS. So what we did is that we do not only provide one single solution, like, yes, you can have your own website created from scratch on Celnix, coded on Celnix, and then release it to the public, but you can also integrate our payment methods through, for example, plugins for the popular e-commerce websites, such as WooCommerce, as we just said, or you can just use our API to create orders on demand and have your completely custom website, or even just integrate a payment button on your website. So we wanted to make it really easy for everyone to just get started, use Celnix in the fastest way possible, and then do whatever they want with their business and manage it as how they say fit.
Absolutely. It makes complete sense what your sort of your target market is. It's definitely, it feels like it's very much aimed at the kind of DIY merchant that wants to be able to build a business, wants to be able to sell online, wants to be able to market online, wants to be able to move into the e-commerce space, perhaps even become an omni-channel business if they've already got physical stores, and be able to manage the very reasonably in their business. And you've got this free tier, this freemium tier, this freemium model whereby you have this free tier where there's very few limits placed on what you can do, but then you've got this pro tier at €29 per month, and you've got a 100 business plan at €199 per month with additional enhanced functionality. And how do you guys see yourselves in competition with a platform like Squarespace or Shopify or like a BigCommerce or some of the other, I guess, some of the other e-commerce focused SaaS platforms that follow a similar model to you guys in terms of trying to keep their platforms accessible and affordable for smaller players, but also having enhanced functionality as you move up their tiers, you know, as you grow, as you scale, adding additional functionality? How do you see you guys in competition with other platforms that are targeting perhaps a similar niche as you guys?
That's a great question. So in terms of pricing, we have some of the lowest fees in the market. And at the same time, we provide with further fees deduction to businesses that have like really low margins. So let's say that you're selling a product and you only make 10% out of $100. We cannot charge you $5 for that, even if our fees are at 5%. So what we do is that we simply cut either that fee down in half, or we reduce it to 1% or 0.5%, depending on the type of business that the merchant is doing. At the same time, like for Shopify, for example, they have billions of dollars. It would not be an issue for them to just, okay, let's spend whatever amount we want to do on that platform and let's integrate digital goods. The way, though, that we see, like comparing ourselves to the competition is our branding, because we were born as a digital goods e-commerce and we will still be doing that in the future. And at the same time, we want to really simplify the way that people can use our platform, not only with classical payment methods. So, you know, you have credit cards, PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, etc., but also with cryptocurrencies. So the best way that we see going forward is to place everything that we're doing on our brand as a digital products e-commerce, rather than being the standard e-commerce that is letting you sell everything that you might want. And at the same time, like I've said before, we are building plugins for every other e-commerce that is out there. So if you would like to accept cryptocurrencies through Celnix, but using Shopify, that's something that you will be able to do in the future as we are working on such a plugin, for example. So yeah, our goal is to be a key player in the digital products market, whilst, for example, Shopify and other platforms are focusing on other kind of products.
So you're really focusing on selling digital goods online versus physical goods online. Sure, of course, you can still sell physical goods through Sellex, but that's not really your primary focus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like the functionalities are there, but all the little features and smart things that our platform can do and that merchants can use are not really a thing for digital, for physical products. Let's take, for example, we have a feature called Discord integration. And what that lets you do is that once a customer purchases a good from you, we automatically add your customer to your Discord server, assign him a role, and do whatever you want with your customer connection. Selling shoes, t-shirts, or like physical materials, you wouldn't really, for example, add your customer to a Discord server. It would be pointless. And that's what I'm saying, is that some of our key features and smartest things that we have are really focused on digital products rather than the physical product experience with shipment, tracking of orders, etc.
And it also feels like you're very much focused on how to tap into digital communities online, because Discord is very much focused at the gaming sector. It's very much focused at the crypto sector. It's very much focused on what's like a more modern version of Slack, if you will, that has the concept of community built into it, has the concept of kind of airdrops built into it, has this concept of community built right into it. And being able to build a public, I actually had my first Q&A session with another brand the other day. They had me as a guest in their Discord, as a guest, basically to come in and talk about e-commerce and answer Q&A with their community about e-commerce questions and where e-commerce is headed. And it was my first time really having a very active part in a Discord community. But it feels very much like Discord is becoming this kind of almost de facto standard for a lot of modern digital communities, where they're starting in Discord. In fact, brands oftentimes are finding themselves built in Discord first, and they've built up a community before they ever start selling anything within that community or to that community or monetizing that community in any way. So it feels like you guys are trying to tap into that concept of digital communities. And obviously, at some point, most people who develop a community and develop a peer-to-peer model like that, they monetize that community in some way, whether it be selling them merchandise, whether it be doing a coin drop, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. Because as I've said, many communities even just born from a Discord server, whilst others just embrace the idea of having a Discord server where their community can chat, have jump in video calls, etc. Like you can take, for example, League of Legends, they have a massive Discord server, or you can take like basically any gaming community, they have a Discord server as well. And so like adding new features and abilities for merchants to integrate their own Discord server, their own community, and expanding it is really what makes like some of the features that we have really great. And at the same time, as we've been saying, focused on digital products rather than selling physical merchandise.
And have you found, now you've been doing this, you've been running the company for just over a year now. So you've obviously been in building mode for over a year now. And just looking at the features and functionality that you've already built, you've achieved a lot in a pretty short period of time. You've got a long list of out-of-the-box integrations that are in build now. But what we've also seen at the heart of some of the things that you're doing is the crypto universe, is that Web3 space. And we've seen a lot of those opportunities evaporate alongside the evaporation of FTX, billions of dollars, and a lot of other significant players inside the crypto and Web3 space have either gone out of business or significantly curtailed their operations, because it all feels like a bit of a Ponzi scheme. And the benefit of the flushing out of a lot of these, let's say, if not intentionally nefarious players, then certainly perhaps less than scrupulous players, and the benefit of the flushing out effect of these players out of the community is that hopefully now regulation will be forced to come to the crypto space, the Web3 space, and hopefully the legitimate players that are building legitimate applications on top of crypto and the blockchain are going to be able to find a market now that of a whole heap of the grifters that were in the space for many years have been flushed down the toilet.
Absolutely. Like, I have seen many people just saying, no, we must not have regulations, we must not have that or that again. But seeing what happened with FTX and seeing how badly the company was managed and how badly they were managing money, and literally nobody noticed until $10 billion went away, is exactly the reason why we need the regulations. However, those regulations should at the same time be aimed at the right kind of thing. Like, you should start regulating more exchanges and requiring them to have a proof of reserves every, I don't know, maybe a year or so, just so that they can show you that their customer funds are not exactly practically all lost. And at the same time, as you've also said, this crypto winter was the perfect occasion to see which crypto players, which crypto companies were just basically fraud. Like, it helped to destroy and remove from the market so many useless cryptocurrencies, so many useless altcoins, and so many useless companies that it actually did a great job for the whole crypto sphere. Because we've been saying, not only us, but a few like cryptocurrencies that we've been partnering with, that they were waiting for this crypto winter for so long, exactly because it just basically shoves away everyone that is not supposed to be here. And we're really happy that it has happened, because, like, for example, our profit margins, our revenue, our cash flow, and the amounts of orders that we have been processing has not slowed down this crypto winter, but it has been steady or growing. And I do believe that's what shows, like, what's differs from a great company and a company that was just bullshitting their way around through this crypto boom, the bull run and whatever.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more. I think that realistically, the likes of Meta, I feel that they're really early in the space. And I don't think that we're going to all be living in the metaverse tomorrow. But do I think that we're going to slowly, as generations pass by and as new generations come along, is it going to become the norm to spend a greater and greater amount of time in digital spaces, in purely digital spaces? I think that's a given. I think what we've seen with the rise of the cell phone as the hub, the remote control of our lives, that was a generational thing too. And as we've seen with e-commerce, that has become a generational thing, where it took time for e-commerce to be accepted. And as new generations come along and as they grow up, participating in e-commerce as a just another form of commerce, just another channel, and it becomes more accepted by the younger generations, it feels like Web3 is a generational thing that is coming, just e-commerce, just like mobile, just like so many of the other technologies, advanced technologies that we've seen hit the mainstream, just like social media, just so many of the things that have hit the mainstream, say over the last 10 years, it feels like Web3 and particularly VR, AR, those are all going to come into their own, but certainly it feels like for true adoption to occur, it's a generational change in the way that people use and leverage and interact with the internet. And it feels like that is that VR is the next computing platform.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, we've seen Facebook basically putting all their money into VR. But as I've said, I think that we're too early for that. Like, the applications, some of these applications might be really good. For example, taking meetings, you could have remote meetings, but at the same time, let's say, feel that your colleagues are actually there. Or for example, let's say two or three virtual screens when you're coding or when you're looking through the web, when you're browsing, when you're reading. Like, those applications are really good, but the technology is not yet there. Like, I do not think I would be able to go through 6-8 hours every day for 5 days a week with a VR in my eyes without feeling sick either 1 or 2 days after. I think that the metaverse, this virtual reality thing, might be a great thing in the future, but it surely is not now. The technology is not there. The public mainly is not there. And what they're trying to do is that they're trying to shove it down our throats, but without having a really good product. Yeah, I don't really think that as of now, the metaverse and the Facebook VR stuff is a really great thing that companies should be building on. they should rather wait and see, can see once Facebook is actually able to launch a great product rather than focusing this more stuff.
And I guess for me, what I've seen as I've watched, because I've been involved in technology, I've been involved in e-commerce for over 20 years, and what I have watched and what I've witnessed in the, let's call it digital tech space over this time, is the fact that there's two things that have to happen in order for a new technology to go mainstream. And those haven't happened yet with VR. And those two things are a killer app. So there has to be at least one killer application on top of a new technology to justify people's buy-in to that technology. And I don't think we found that yet. I think that gaming is still the lion's share of what happens in VR today. And I just don't think, although gaming is an absolutely massive industry, it's certainly not what we would consider mainstream in terms of the vast majority of society does computer gaming in VR. I don't think that's the case today, and I don't think it'll be the case in the near future. So I think that killer application with the modern cell phone, just having reasonable, high quality access to the internet and a web browser was enough of a killer application. Being able to carry the internet in your pocket was the killer application of the smartphone. And I think that that was enough of a use case all on its own to justify mass adoption of the smartphone. And so I think that's the first prerequisite, is a killer application. There has to be a killer application to where the vast majority of society would find a reason to live a significant portion of their life in VR. And I just don't think we're there yet with the killer applications. And then the second piece of the puzzle, I think, is standards. We do not have, as of today, we do not have VR and AR standards. Every brand and every tech company out there, from Google to Facebook to Amazon to Apple, they're all developing their own unique standards. And in most cases, they are inoperable with each other. Their technology is inoperable with each other. And as we saw with VHS versus Beta and so many other technologies over the years, where sometimes the standard that is adopted by the wider community ends up being the one that wins, even if the underlying technology is not actually the best technology out there. If it is adopted as a standard, it wins. And so I feel as though we absolutely must, as an industry, get to a space where there are universal standards for VR and AR, similar to how we have HTML, CSS, and JavaScript today, which drives the 95% of Web 2.0, we need to get to standards for Web 3, and we just are not there yet. And that will continue to throttle and hold back adoption significantly until we do get there, and until all of these major players realize that collaboration, at least on a standard, is going to be required for any of them to win long term. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree. And I believe that we won't reach a standard anytime soon, because Apple, Google, you see what are the products they have and they compete against each other. There's no way that we can reach a really good standard for VR and for the meta, let's say metaverse, but whatever this virtual world might be called, in the near future. And I would add one other great point to your two, which is price. Like, VR headsets and everything happening on the metaverse is not crazy expensive, but it is still really expensive for the general public to be joining in.
And I think that also goes back to the standards issue, because each of these companies is building hardware to their own standards and developing the standards as they go. The cost to develop those standards, even if it's just a one-off standard for their company and their platform and their technology, is borne 100% by this. So the development of those standards, the development of the underlying technology, is borne individually by each of these companies. And so therefore, it's not amortized across all of these companies. So until they can start to agree some standards, or create a working group, or create a standards group, until they can start doing that, and until they can start sharing the development burden and the cost associated with that, I don't think VR can go mainstream until that happens.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's no way that something like VR goes mainstream without having proper standards where developers can build up from and where companies can base their product from. Because, yeah, absolutely, every company should be able to make their own product, but they cannot there cannot be three different app stores for one VR thing. There must be one standard for every developer to build up from, and one standard from every company to create their VR experience from.
And how do you guys see your platform fitting in to that eventual emergence of some kind of a standard in the metaverse? Do you feel like because you guys have your suite of APIs, because you guys really are focused on digital goods being sold in digital ways and digital methods of engagement with fans, with customers, with a community, do you feel that you are basically ready in advance, that you basically have built a platform that is future-proof in the way that it would be a very, very small step for you guys to create storefront technology that would work in a metaverse environment? And therefore, you guys feel like you're perfectly positioned to perhaps move into the metaverse when the time is right, faster or better or easier than some of your major competitors in the market?
I really do believe so, because like we would not be like a platform offering services on the metaverse, but rather we would be facilitating payments on the metaverse, meaning that we would be facilitating transactions between users that are using virtual reality games or virtual reality headsets and anything related to the metaverse, even the really famous NFTs. Like we have the perfect product to integrate directly in the middle of that without having to rely on any other platform. Because as we've said, every single payment in cryptocurrencies, for example, is processed by us and managed by our infrastructure. And at the same time, we handle everything from infra to sending the money out to the merchants, meaning that we would have the perfect position where we would be basically processing payments for customers and for merchants in the metaverse and without actually having to be on it ourselves.
And how do you guys see yourself fitting in with the major, for example, NFT marketplaces like OpenSea, etc.? Now, I see on your integrations list here, you've already got GA, you've got CrispChat already there. You've got MailChimp, Zapier, HubSpot, Canva, Salesforce, and Facebook Pixel all coming soon in terms of out-of-the-box integrations. But what we see today already is the likes of Shopify talking about how you can sell NFTs via the Shopify platform. But what we haven't seen as of yet that I am aware of, any of the major e-commerce platforms integrating with any of the emerging and well-established digital asset marketplaces like OpenSea. And so where do you guys see yourself fitting in to the emerging digital goods marketplace models that are pretty well proven out there now? How do you guys see yourself fitting into those marketplaces and the ability to list and sell on those marketplaces and then execute the transaction or perhaps integrate that transaction back down to Celix?
So we've had a few merchants wanting to use Celix specifically to process cryptocurrency transactions and then sell their NFTs maybe on private Discord communities or on other platforms as well. So basically just using Celix as a payment method, since we offer more than 14 cryptos, and then they can just move the NFT asset from their address to the customer address. But at the same time, we are looking to, in the near future, to integrate native NFT kind of solutions, meaning that you would be able to directly sell and directly mint your NFT on Celix once it's bought. But as of now, we do not have like such a native basic integration. We only allow for merchants to process cryptocurrency payments, and then they can handle the sending the NFT part themselves.
So they would have to separately list their items. For example, on OpenSea, they would have to execute the transaction through OpenSea and then move their digital asset into Celix to then be able to on-sell those digital assets through Celix.
Yeah, basically either that or using Celix to get the payment from the customer and then sending the NFT that they have on their wallet to the customer without having to use an OpenSea, for example. So let's say that you have your store on Celix, you ask the customer, okay, give me your Ethereum address where I will be sending the NFT once it's minted. You get the payment, so the customer can pay in USDT, Bitcoin, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Nano, or whatever he wants. Once you receive the payment, you send the asset from your Ethereum wallet to the customer Ethereum wallet.
And what if I want to use a more traditional payment gateway with your platform that is not dealing and transacting in crypto? Let's say I want to use Stripe and I want to take credit card payments via Stripe, or I want to use Apple Pay or Google Pay via Stripe with Celex. Do you integrate with other payment gateways other than just your own crypto gateway?
Yeah, other than our managed cryptos, we have other payment methods. So first off, we have Stripe. Stripe offers basically credit card payments, but at the same time, we're able to offer like banking and regional methods through Stripe, meaning that like Stripe has an alternative, what they call alternative payment methods. Those alternative payment methods are, for example, Ideal, MyBank, SafeTransfers, Pago, so forth, etc. Then we have PayPal, and at the same time, PayPal is very similar to Stripe. So you can accept credit cards, you can accept payments through other PayPal accounts, but you can also accept Venmo, Ideal, MyBank, and SafeTransfers just like you can with Stripe. Then we have some additional payment integrations with Perfect Money and Cash App, which are two other popular payment methods, and Skrill as well. Then on the side of cryptos, but not really cryptos, we also have an integration with Binance Pay, which enables you to receive funds directly to your Binance account from the customer's Binance Pay account.
Okay, and that obviously allows you to use the Binance coin as well.
Exactly, but we allow the Binance coin to be used both through the chain. So you would send a normal Binance coin transaction. We accept that as well. But you can also use the Binance Pay app to pay basically peer-to-peer. So the money is not actually transferred to the blockchain, but is transferred through Binance accounts.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And what is on your radar? Let's say we were looking out, you've been in business for over a year now. You've obviously been developing based on feedback from your existing customer base and the communities that you've built around your platform. What is on your radar as being high priority over, say, the next 6, 12, 18 months? What are pieces of functionality that your customers are either asking for today or already on your development roadmap that are super high priority for you guys?
So we have an amazing community, and we have like hundreds and hundreds of suggestions on our roadmap. As of now, we are in what you've called before, like our development phase, meaning that we're working to bring really new features to our platform. And some of them are like an integration to be able for merchants to accept credit cards, but get paid in cryptocurrencies. That's one of the big things that we are working on. At the same time, we're working on some features to enable basically the customers of the merchants to have their own dashboard where they can set, where they can share products with other people, receive discounts configured by the merchants, and do basically anything they want. And also the major feature that we're working on are basically, let's say, marketing features. So from email marketing to being able to share coupons, product updates, and anything related with your customers automatically from the Celex dashboard without having to rely on, for example, MailChimp or other integrations, even if that's already possible.
And how do you guys see your seller fees? So you've got your SaaS fees every month, right? You've got your zero, your 29 euro, your 199 euro plans. You also give an additional discount, saving 20% on those headline fees if someone subscribes for a year at a time. So they go with the annual service. And at the free tier, the way in which you levy additional fees is that there are transaction fees. On the free tier, it's 5%. On your first paid, your cheapest paid tier, it's 3% transaction fee. And on your most expensive paid tier, you are at 1% transaction fees plus 25% for payouts higher than $5. And so obviously those fees are more expensive than traditional gateway fees through something like a Stripe. And so therefore, what from your perspective, how do you feel that this is going to be so attractive that brands are going to want to transact in cryptocurrencies when the fees to do so are reasonably high? So what do you see as the single biggest draw card for merchants to be transacting via crypto on Celex?
That's a great question. So the first thing, for example, is that those fees are not just for the payments themselves, but are because we are handling the whole infrastructure that the merchant then shouldn't worry about. And at the same time, they're there because we place ourselves as a basically storefront platform, meaning that you can create and host your website from scratch. However, if your solely goal should be, and the only feature and thing that you want are basically cryptocurrency payments through our API, we do offer discounted price on our plans. For example, we have our business plan, which only charges 1% on crypto transactions. And we also want to basically enable merchants to use the best cryptos for their solution, meaning that we do not take anything more than we should from transaction fees, meaning that if a transaction costs 10 cents to send it from us to you, we just charge you the 10 cents. And then, yeah, we take our 3, 5, 1% transaction fees. But we also want to, for example, we have Nano, for which transactions are completely feeless. So you do not pay anything when sending a transaction with Nano, with the cryptocurrency. So what we are doing with them, for example, is that we are enabling merchants to use Nano and pay zero fees, both on our end and on Nano's end, because the blockchain, the Nano blockchain, the way it works is that you do not pay any transaction fees when sending transactions. And we will also be extending the zero fees on Celix as well. To directly answer your question, I believe that the features and the infrastructure that we offer is a very solid infrastructure. We have basically zero downtime on every single transaction, and we pay out merchants within 24 hours than when we receive a paid invoice. So I think that is the main reason why we are charging the amount of fees that we are. But at the same time, we're really open to negotiating them based on what the merchant wants to do. Because if someone says, okay, look, I'm just going to use your API, I do not care about my website, I do not want anything else to do with it, we're very happy to like give you our pro plan for free or scale you down to like less fees, like from 5% to 1% or even 0.5%, depending on what your business needs.
Sounds very reasonable to me. Sounds like you're trying to create a new market, really, for merchants to be able to transact in ways that they've never been able to transact before. So you're very much creating a category, really, of platform. You're creating a category of e-commerce functionality that is quite unique in the marketplace. And really, I guess you are getting ahead of the next wave as we start to exit the crypto winter, as regulation will surely come to the industry. It sounds like you guys very much are ahead of the curve, and it's always difficult to be at the bleeding edge, of course, when you're trying to effectively create a brand new category of anything, but certainly a new category of software. Effectively, that is always a big challenge, but that's also where some of the biggest opportunities lie. So congratulations on going after the exact segment of the market that is really quite underserved today. And it's certainly going to create new opportunities for merchants as well. Having access to a platform like yours is going to create new opportunities for merchants and for you guys as well. Now, we're reaching the point of the conversation where now I get to turn the microphone over to you. I get to let you ask me one question, any question you like. So what is your question for me, Mr. Daniele from Celix?
So first off, nice pronunciation there. That was very much better than the first one you said. So thank you for that. And in terms of my question, I think I would be simply asking, what's your real honest opinion on businesses that are offering cryptos? Like, we've seen FTX, we've seen like BlockFi, we've seen many crypto businesses that have failed. And so my question to you is, do you think that there's an inherent problem with cryptos, or that those businesses were just badly managed?
Look, do I think that cryptocurrencies offer a promise in advance of modern traditional fiat currencies in the digital world? Absolutely, without question. I experienced it myself. When you want to make a crypto payment peer-to-peer, the ability to make that payment, the ability to have it effectively be quote-unquote free exchange rate, where there's virtually zero fees associated with that, to where crypto payments can happen virtually instantaneously in a peer-to-peer fashion. Does all of that offer incredible value to end consumers as an alternative to national fiat? Without a doubt, it does. There's no question about it. And certainly when you tack on the additional functionality associated with smart contracts and NFTs and the ability to offer value to the holder of a cryptocurrency over and above the pure currency value. So the network effect, the network value of that currency, certainly there is, I think it's pretty much undeniable that cryptocurrency and the blockchain in particular offers certain functionality and certain programmability that you cannot get with modern fiat currencies. And well, we could call them legacy fiat currencies because they've been around for a very long time. Do I think that is going to reach the mainstream anytime soon? No, I don't. And I think the reason for that is because the likes of FTX and some of the other major crypto exchanges, particularly the centralized exchanges that have gone under, they've given, unfortunately, the entire industry a bit of a black eye. And I think they've probably set back crypto adoption by about a decade, would be my guess. If I had to put a number on it, I would say that they've set back crypto adoption by about a decade. Crypto was just starting to hit mainstream consciousness. And I think that, unfortunately, not your keys, not your wallet, not your crypto. I think that right there, is exactly why we're going to see a rapid slowing down of crypto adoption, because it's still far too complex for the average person in the street today to adopt crypto into their everyday lives. Centralized exchanges are something that are unfortunately a necessary evil in the industry because they make it tremendously easy to buy and sell cryptocurrencies for the average person, because those exchanges function very much like your online brokerage account for stocks, for bonds, et cetera, for ETFs. And so there is a certain amount of centralization that eases the adoption curve dramatically for consumers. But as we've seen, most centralized exchanges, or at least what is appearing to be most centralized exchanges, are untrustworthy because they are largely unregulated. So Coinbase, obviously being in the United States, is heavily regulated. And at least as far as anybody can tell right now, they are on a full reserve basis. And do I think they're going to grab a whole lot of market share in this space as the crypto winter comes to an end? I think they will. Do I think Binance is grift like FTX was? Who knows? That's the problem. And that is the challenge that the crypto space is going to have to overcome, is that unfortunately there were so many bad actors, from Luna and Doquan, and there's been hundreds, literally hundreds of bad actors in the space that have given the industry a black eye. And unfortunately, it is going to take some level of centralization and certainly regulation in order for crypto and in order for Web3 to go mainstream. In addition to standards, there is going to have to be regulation. And so I think that once those things start to happen, I think that, and it's going to probably take a decade. So the reality is, although we've pushed back adoption by a decade, it's probably going to take at least a decade for meaningful regulations to hit the industry, for meaningful projects to once again emerge in the industry, for centralized, highly regulated exchanges that make adoption super easy to really become the norm as opposed to the exception. So to answer your question, I think absolutely. I think Web3 will all eventually go mainstream. I think it's a foregone conclusion that they will, but I think we've been set back by at least a decade.
Yeah, honestly, I couldn't have said that better. Those are my thoughts as well. And unfortunately, it's what happened with all those players, with SBF, with FTX, etc. But I really also think that it needed to happen, because if it didn't happen now, it would have happened later, and the consequences would have been much, much worse.
Totally agree. Realistically, even though we're talking somewhere between $20 and $40 billion flushed down the toilet in the SBF debacle, the reality is, in comparison to the broader economy and, for example, the equities-based economy and global share markets, et cetera, it's still literally a drop in the bucket. And the contagion was really relatively limited to the crypto Web3 spaces. And as a result of that, I think that, as you rightly point out, I think that the impact on the broader economy, and sure, we're going to a recession, an engineered recession, where the central banks are trying to engineer a recession to try to put a cap on inflation? And did the implosion of FTX and the crypto economy, did that exacerbate or fall into a recession? Probably. Maybe it added a little bit more fuel to the fire. But in terms of the contagion for the overall economy, I think it's relatively limited in terms of its fallout. But certainly the consequences will be long term. And I think that's the key here. It's a very exciting space to be in. I still continue to believe that the crypto and Web3 space are the future of the modern internet. It's just going to take us a little bit longer to get there. And I think what's going to ultimately happen is that the traditional players in the fiat space, the traditional banking sector, this is going to be their cue to all of a sudden come in, make waves in the Web3 space. And it is going to be their cue now to all of a sudden, really, they will see an opportunity to take over and own this space and apply more traditional banking and finance regulations to the crypto sector. I think they're licking their chops at this opportunity. So do I think it's the death of crypto and Web3? Absolutely not. But I think we're going to see much more traditional regulation, many more traditional players come into the space, and they're going to bring an air of legitimacy to the industry that it has really lacked. And so I think those all have elements of upside for those of us playing in the digital space.
Yeah, exactly. And like, we also need, as I said, more decentralized players, because we've all seen what happened with the so-called decentralized, like stablecoin USD. Like, we need more decentralized exchange. We need more centralized platforms. That's also what we're looking to build towards, with smart contracts for payouts, just like we're doing already. But yeah, that is also going to be one key thing in the future of cryptos, more decentralized players in the market.
No question. Listen, it has been fantastic chatting with you. You're obviously in the middle of building a groundbreaking platform in Celex. If people want to find out more, if they want to talk to you, if they want to find out more about Celex, are they best to reach out to you on LinkedIn? Are they best to reach out to you on Discord? Are they best to simply go to Celex, Celix.io, to learn more and reach out to you via your website? How would you prefer that people get a hold of you?
So it really depends on what they're asking. I guess that if they just want to see what we're building and just stay up to date, they can follow our Twitter profile, Celex e-commerce on Twitter. Otherwise, if they have questions about the product or questions that they would likely ask to me, they can just go directly to my LinkedIn profile or simply my email, which is Daniele, Daniele.
Listen, mate, it's been a fantastic chat. It's been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing what you're doing over at Celex. I wish you every success. It's not easy. It is not easy building an e-commerce platform for the future. So I wish you all of the very best, and I'd love to get you back on in another 12, 18 months and see how far Celex has come in the meantime. So thank you so much for sharing your time today with me.
Thank you very much as well. Thank you for having me on your podcast. And I really hope the same to you, because it's been really a great time here, and I really hope that your podcast goes forward as well.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.